One of the advantages I have is that I am old. And Swami often says, old is gold. And therefore you are willing to pass over any faults or failings, old man. And I've also got a good excuse for forgetting. Power to forget is a very important acquisition. Just as memory, forgetting also is a very important quality. If you remember everything that has happened to you, it will be a calamity. It will be a terrible burden. And about old men, I always like this. Yeats, the Irish poet, has written, an aged man is but a paltry thing, not very much valued. As a matter of fact, some people have come to me and said, when they know that my daughter is looking after me, they say, what? In Germany or in some other countries in the West? Nobody would care for you. You let me put into an aged home. And in India, old people are considered as a good treasure and looked after by some relative, if not daughter, uncle's daughter, or father-in-law's grandson. Anybody. See, there is this feeling of kinship and a feeling of responsibility, at least to look after old people. But this heat says, an aged man is but a paltry thing, a tattered coat upon a stick. A tattered coat upon a stick. Unless if you are not that, you are simply a tattered coat upon a stick, a paltry thing. But unless soul clap its hands and sing, the soul of the old man must clap its hands and sing. And louder sing, not only sing, but louder sing, for every tatter in its mortal dress. Because an old man must have had a number of tatters, must have received so many blows, must have passed through so many accidents and troubles and disappointments, and each one is a tatter upon his coat. But when a tatter happens, when something like that happens, if he claps his hands and sings, "Hello, oh, fate has treated me badly," that means the gods remember my existence. If you've got a headache, you must be thankful that it reminds us that you have got a head. So also, if you get a tatter in your coat, if something happens to you which you don't like, it means that, in Indian philosophy, it means that you are working out your karma. And the sooner you do it, the better. Or it may be that God, just like the book of Job, that God pays some attention to you and that He knows of your existence and that He wants to test you and He wants to improve you. And He puts you in a cauldron and removes your alloy, and the sooner He does it, the better. And the better He does it, the gladder you are. So unless soul clap its hands and sing, and louder sing for every tatter in its mortal dress. Nor is there singing school. If clapping your hands and singing when anything that you don't like happens to you, if that is worthwhile, have you got any school where we can learn how to sing when we get these tatters? Nor is there singing school, but studying, you must be able to study monuments of its own magnificence. You study a monument of its own magnificence. The soul must study. There is no school. There are only examples. There are only ideas. There are only persons. There are only phenomena of magnificence. So the soul's magnificence. How magnificent can a human soul be? If you are able to study that and learn from that, then old age is worthwhile. Then every tatter is a lesson in fortitude, in sadhana, in it is a step towards God. That is what Keats has got to say. And what greater monument of magnificence of the soul can we have than Baba himself? So I always congratulate myself that though I am old and a tattered coat upon a stick, I have been able to clap my hands and sing whenever tatter happens on my coat. And how do they learn to sing? The school, studying the monument of its magnificence. Here is a magnificent monument of soul inspiration. And because fate has, or rather Baba has, drawn me near him, I've been able to study that magnificence, and I'm putting up with all the tatters, because it is not a tatter, but it is a pat on the back. It is a pinch in the cheek. A loving reminder of the existence of the parent. When the mother twitches your cheek, that pains, but comfortable, reassuring. Now, Baba is unique in that respect. That is why we say he is an avatar. He is not a teacher. He is not a prophet. He is not a... Many people ask me, what does Swami say about the disarmament talks that are going to happen between Regan, between Gromyko and Schultz next month? What is he? He's not an astrologer. He has come for certain purposes for which we must be thankful if we are instruments. Now, what are the purposes for which he has come? He has announced why this avatar has happened. Probably, when he was addressing a vast audience, packed audience, in the Purnachandra Auditorium some years ago, he must have felt the yearning in the minds of the people who were before him. You know, before he addresses the audience, he gets down, moves among them, goes all round the whole place, and what he probably does, because he need not, but what he probably does is to get the sense, he to sense the uppermost thought that activates the people who are sitting there. And probably when he went that day, he must have felt some yearning that some people had very prominently in their minds as to why is he called avatar? Why has God come down among men? How does he believe that it is possible for him to do his work with us as his instruments? It takes a great deal of courage to believe that you and I can be instruments in his work, that we can be molded. We have resisted molding all these years, and we have insisted upon our own peculiarities and idiosyncrasies and prejudices. And here comes a phenomenon who says, come along, I make you messengers of my mission, messengers of my purpose. God alone can have that faith. Anyway, that day he announced some of the purposes for which he has come. And I'll read the Telugu so that at least you can hear Telugu. యుగధర్మ పద్ధతుల్ విగలితమై ఉండ నయమార్గమున తృప్తి నడపు కొరకు. కొరకు మీన్స్ ఫర్ దిస్ పర్పస్. అండ్ యు గెట్ ఎ సిరీస్ ఆఫ్ కొరకుస్ ఫార్ దిస్ ఫార్ దిస్ ఫార్ దిస్ ఫార్ దిస్. ద ఫస్ట్ వన్ ఈస్ యుగధర్మ పద్ధతు. ఎవరీ యుగ ఆర్ ఎవరీ stage in human history, every era, so to say, has got its own problems, and they have got to be met by a set of reactions and responses, and they have got to be suffered and sustained and corrected by certain new approaches. Every new situation requires a new approach. And we have got this present age is what is called the Kali Yuga in Indian scriptures. Or it may be, as Swami Vivekananda has said, we have got first in human history, we have got the Brahmin as the predominant maker of the times. That is to say, theological. That is to say, the priest. That is to say, the medicine man and the druids and the religious person was considered as the example, the exemplar, the leader, and everything according to him. Theocratic, you can say. That is the Brahmin age. Then you have the Kshatriya age, the warriors, the great conquerors, Alexander and others, trying to eat up the earth more and more. Earth hunger. And riding over boundaries of kingdoms, slaughtering Attila the Hun, Tamerlane, people who spread terror and fear, and in their pride, in their greed, the Kshatriyas. Then you have the Vaishyas, the merchant group, those who go from continent to continent. Trade follows the flag. The traders, the hunters of markets, those who want to dump their products upon unwilling people, try to multiply their wants by means of advertisements. It's not a question of demand and supply, but we supply and you demand it. You have to demand. We'll make you demand it. We'll make you feel that without this, life is not worthwhile. And therefore, and we'll give it to you by installments. You don't want it by totally. So we all live on installments now. That is the Vaishya, the traders, the multinationals, all those who want to spread their tentacles all over the world in search of profit, in search of trade. And to protect the trader, the others. That is one stage. The last stage, the present stage, is the Shudra. That is to say, the worker, the laborer, the farmer, their trade unions, their strikes, their demand for something more. They are able to move governments. They are able to decide the fate of nations. The common man has become a very uncommon man now, because his hunger is increasing. His level of standard of life has got to be as high as the highest of the country. So this is the age of the Shudra, as Vivekananda has said. And therefore, every age has got a new dharma. And Swami says, I have come when the dharma of this particular age, of this particular situation in the world, has become weak. People don't know what exactly is the moral code, the method of life, the ideal of life that must be placed before the community or the society for this particular age. And because they don't know it, I have come in order to tell them about the special, what is right at the present moment for the present situation. And he says, Nayamargam unatrippi nadapukuram. And tell them, not as the previous avatars. Rama came with a bow and arrows, inexhaustible arrows. And when the sea refused to give place for him, to build a bridge across to the island in which his wife had been kidnapped. He drew the thing and said, "Come on, I'll drive up." And the poor sea came and said, "Excuse me, I will leave." But then the trouble was, he had put the arrow upon the bow. And it can't be wasted. It must be released. You can't put the arrow back again into the quiver. It has got to be operated. So Rama said, "What am I to do? You have now yielded." And then he just, it seems, he shot it back and it fell in the Ran of Kutch. We have got in Gujarat, between Gujarat and Pakistan, a long area of the sea coast which is more slush and which is not deep, which is not navigable and which is full of all kinds of marshy area and bogged with slush and all that. A huge area is there, and that was the place where this arrow fell. So drying up that ocean there, it has got to be dried up. So that is the termination of Rama. So Rama had a bow. Krishna had various other instruments. But Swami has come with a smile. That is the weapon with which he conquers. So nayamargamuna. I want to instruct people in the code of morals that they have got to observe to improve the present situation slow, softly and sweetly. Nayamargamuna, by good words. That's why Swami used to say, "I am a teacher." There is another poem in which he recited, in which he said, "I am a satyabodhaka, I am a teacher of truth." He has come as a teacher. And he teaches so softly and sweetly. Because we are all pupils, and the teacher can't deal cruelly with us, because we'll run away. And so he has got to get us all together and smile upon us a cool moonlight, so that we will imbibe also more. If you create fear, then you will run away and you won't learn lessons. So it is, Swami has said that he is giving us his message like the mother feeding the child. And the Indian mothers, they have got a method of feeding the child. I am not a mother, but I have been fed like that, and so I can say how they do it. They take the, say, little rice and milk or curds mixed together nicely, and then they carry the child upon the hip. And then they have the thing, and then they feed the child as they move around the garden or the house. But the child refuses to eat. It will shake its head and say no. So Swami once demonstrated on the platform how he was feeding the child. That is how he is feeding us. The mother will say, "Look at that crow." And the crow says, "Ka, ka, ka." And the child says, "Ka." So draw its attention somewhere else. Make it feel that it is not being fed at all. Make it feel that it is a very pleasant thing. In the intervals between a story in another. He tells a story. He sings a song. He sings a bhajan. By all these methods your attention is distracted. Meanwhile, you are being given the most sustaining type of food. So, nayamargamuna trippi. So, Swami points out that I am not like the other avatars who came armed to kill, but he has come to deal with you softly and sweetly. That is the first purpose for which he has come. Because each age requires a new teacher. The old lesson, no doubt. But you've got more teaching aids now. And the method of teaching also is different. In the old days when I was a student of the schools, the teacher was armed with a cane. A cane. That was the teaching aid. And if you have got a school as your neighboring building, then you can hear the swish of the cane over the backs of all the students. Remember? Swami says that when he was in this village school, everybody who comes late to class, late to school, first, all right. Second, all right. Third, all right. The fourth will be punished with four beatings by the cane. Fifth, five. Six. And if you don't answer a question in class, he has got to be, he will be made to stand, and he who is able to answer the question has got the privilege of giving a slap on the cheeks. They will all be made to sit and stand in a line, and the fellow who is intelligent enough to answer the question will be able to beat slap the cheeks of all the other boys. And Swami always had that privilege. But Swami says, how could I beat those children? How could I slap those innocent fellows? Simply because they don't know the answer to a question, to be beaten like that. So Swami always, he beats, of course, slaps, but it will be so smooth. It will be like applying cream. And the teacher will be watching. The vigor and the power with which he is slapping. And Swami says, because his heart won't allow him to give a strong slap to the cheeks of his own classmates and boys of the same village. So he will say, come along, I'll show you how to beat those fellows. Come here. And Swami was given slaps on the cheek by the teacher. Beat them like that. And he used to suffer that. That was the punishment. So, in the old avatars, armed to kill, this avatar, nayamargamuna trippi, change their behavior, change their conduct by simple, soft, sweet means. That is one kurama. You know, remember what's meant by kuraku? For this. Second kuraku. Lokamul kalilo kallolamai chediyunda nishkalmashamu chesi nilupu kuraku. Now, the world, Swami is speaking about the world. the world has become full of kalaha, that is full of factions. And therefore, restless. This is the age of anxiety, the age of fear, the age of sleeplessness, the age of sleeping pills. Otherwise you won't get sleep. There's a restlessness and anxiety on account of factions. He makes a pun upon that. This is called Kali Yuga. The Swami says it is Kalaha Yuga. Kalaha means factions, parties, fighting. The world has become ruined by these factions. Therefore, and why does it happen? Because the heart is polluted. Pollution of the heart. So in order to remove the pollution in men's hearts, which reduces them to this ridiculous position of dividing themselves into factions and fighting. That is another purpose for which I have come. Kustu, that is, what is the balm with which he is going to remove this pollution of the heart, the spreading of the message of love. Love is the balm. Love your neighbor, because the neighbor is yourself. Not love thy neighbor as thyself. Love thy neighbor, because you are your neighbor. You are your neighbor. He is not different from you. Your life depends upon your neighbor. If his child gets measles, your child will get it tomorrow. If he cultivates hatred, that vibration will affect you also. So unless he is a good man, you can't be a good man. Unless his family is healthy, your family can't be healthy. We're bound together. You are your neighbor. And therefore, and also, philosophically and scripture, and according to scriptures, all are the same. All are parts of the one. So, in order to remove these factions that are creating anxiety at the present time in the world, I have come in order to remove the pollution of the heart. You must have heard the statement, war is made in the minds of men. So in the minds of men are polluted. And that pollution is to be removed by the balm of love. And I have come for that. Then, a third purpose, good men, dhumargabandhulai krungi dhinatanundu sadhu samrakshana salapu parapu. I am reading that because you won't be satisfied unless I read that koraku. There must be one more koraku coming. What happens is, good men, there are good men. And these people suffer because they are surrounded by bad men, surrounded by wickedness. Poor fellows, they can't even breathe. They suffocate in this atmosphere. They are so few. And the flood of hatred threatens to carry them off their feet. So they are saying, oh God, is there no one to save us? Is this our fate, that we are born in this place, that we are grouped as this group or that group? Have we no help? Is there no Savior? Is there no God? So good men everywhere are clamoring for support, are crying out for somebody saving them. And I have come in order to assure them that they will get succor, that they need not despair, that it is someone who is interested in their welfare. You know, there is individual good men. I must have told some of you at least the story of a girl student in San Diego, living in the international house attached to the San Diego University. And the lady in charge, Muriel Engels, had written to me this story of somebody living in the 10th floor or so, alone in one room. The whole building was occupied by students from various nations, and she was one. And she suffered from arthritis. And at about 10 o'clock one night, when everybody had gone to sleep, 10 or 11, she got tremendous pain. And she said, she shouted for help. Is there no one to help me? Anyone come for my help. Anyone. You see, she shouted like that. Because she didn't know who the next room or this room or the top flat or the ground flat, didn't know them. And so she simply called on anyone. Here is a innocent student, helpless girl, shouting for help. Anyone? Is there no one? Anyone? If you have got no one, this is the one. And Muriel Engels wrote to me, the door was bolted, she was on their bed, crying in agony, and Swami walked in. She didn't know any more Swami. Red robe, afro hair. That is the signature tune. Inimitable. Swami walked in. She says, a red-robed person came and stood by my bed and said, why do you shout so loud? That is love. To call on Swami, you need not shout loud. You can even whisper. You can even pray in the silence of your heart. Imagine the situation. Why do you shout so loud? And what did she shout for? Anyone? And here is the one. And Baba, it seems, and created vibhuti and applied it to her forehead and then patted her as a mother pats a child to go to sleep. And she had no pain and she slept off and he disappeared. Next morning, she went to Muriel Engels, the director of that institute, international hostel, and said, look here, last night when I shouted like this, some guy what a word, that guy. Walked in and he put something on my forehead. And I slept. And really looked at it. Ah! That is Vibhuti. And it is Sai Baba. Did he have an orange gown? Yes. And a yes. Quite big. That is what happens. So in this Koraku, what does he say? Even good men surrounded by the wicked cry out for God, cry out for help in order to protect them and save them. That's one of the purposes for which I have come. So the last line is avatarinchenu, avatar. I have come down. Avatarinchenu, achyutudu. I am Achyuta. Achyuta is one of the names of God in Sanskrit. It means he who is not diminishable. He doesn't suffer diminution. Unchanging, permanent, eternal. That is Achyutudu. Avatarinchenu, Achyutudu, Partiyandu. Parti is Puttaparti. So this Achyuta has taken avatar at Parti. Vasudevakhya. I am the very person who is known in the Bhagavatam as Vasudeva. Vasudevakhya Sri Hari Vasudha Shauri. That is how it ends. For this purpose, Achyuta, that is the unchanging divinity, has taken shape and is born in Parti. Now, this is another purpose. To save good men from damnation. Then, Nada, which is a very rare purpose. These other avatars have said all these. Or we can attribute all these to teach the dharma that must be followed in a particular situation, to remove the pollution that affects people's minds and creates disaster in the world, to protect the good. All these three is all right. The fourth one is unique so far as Baba is concerned. And that is Bhashyartha Guptamul Paluku Koraku Kala Sandidha Nigraha Suktulai Undu Bhashyartha Guptamul Paluku Koraku. On account of the passage of time and the multiplicity of commentaries, a person, when he makes a commentary, you know the big quarrel that has divided Christianity into saying, was Christ and the Father of the same essence or are they of different essences? You see, essentially is the Son, essentially the Father, or different. So there was a big council of Nicaea. All the bishops joined together. And somebody said, yes, they are the same. He who makes any difference between the Father and the Son is an outcast. The others said, no. How can the Son be the same as the Father? There must be little difference. And so, it all depends on a diphthong, they say. Now, factions, grammarians come and spoil the whole thing. Linguists. So, each commentator, the trouble is, even with all research, even in science, what happens is, you discover what you want to discover. You see what you would like to see. And therefore Swami has once said, you must investigate into the process of investigation itself. Because the process of investigation, you are led to certain conclusions which are very pleasing to you. Because it is unpleasant, you won't look that side. you will avoid it and try to overcome it. So, commentators have confused. The original words are simple, but they have been made complex by these commentators who try to introduce into it all their scholarships. And therefore, scriptures have lost their pure original meaning. I have come to reveal the original meaning, the inner significance of all the scriptures. This is something new so far as Swami is concerned, because world outlook itself is new. And then, the usual purpose of all avatars, you saw in that drama the other day, Christmas drama, Mother Earth coming, a little child, and coming and complaining, "Oh, the world is ruined. God, you must come again." And then all the series started. So that child coming with so much of agony and falling at the feet of the Lord of the world and saying, "You must say, I can't bear this burden." It seems it is the burden. A wicked man is heavier than a good man. And therefore, on account of wickedness and cruelty and factions and hatred, "I can't bear this burden. Please remove this burden." That is the cry. And Swami says, "I have come in order to save the earth from the burden which she is suffering from." Now, Rama also came for that purpose. And how did he remove the burden? Krishna also. Swami, how does he remove the burden? The weight that the earth is carrying? Well, I have got an explanation. He cuts us down to size. Therefore, weight is reduced. Of course, Swami doesn't like fat people. The first advice, by ridicule and by laughter, and he tries to reduce our sizes. Eat less. He doesn't like fat people because they are burden upon the earth. And another thing is swelled heads. So there was a big officer, VIP, who was coming from somewhere 300 miles off, the south of India. And he wrote to me a letter. Not only a letter, but he sent me his program. Arrival at Bangalore, as if I must begin to shiver when he comes to Bangalore. Arrival at Bangalore 8:30, and then by car he comes to Penukonda, 20 miles off. Arrival at Penukonda, so I must dress myself up nicely and collect all the good adjectives that I know so that I may welcome him and give him a warm handshake when he comes here. And then arrival at Prashanti Nilayam. And the big man comes. And he came. And he came in his car. And he looked around. Nobody had anticipated his coming. Where is that Kasturi to whom? Then he thought that there is nobody here. But they were all sitting, hundreds of people, silently. So he came in. And Swami called him to the interview room. He and his wife. And he said, "You came, three of you, where is the other person?" "No, Swami, only myself and my wife." "No, there was a third person." "Yeah, oh, he is a chokra. He's a boy who, you see, when we came in the car, if we go to a hotel or something, we wanted someone to be looking after the car. So a boy, he's a boy that we got, a servant boy. Hey, chokra, huh? Should he not see me? Go and get the chokra." And poor fellow, I was sitting in the veranda and he wanted to tell me to bring the chokra. Because he was always used to command somebody to do his work for him. And he ran all around the place. The chokra was in some tea shop. And unless he brought the chokra, Swami did not give him a swelled head. There's another case. Somebody from Madras, state president of Madras, came to Bangalore. His wife's sister was in Bangalore. So they came over here. The two sisters, ladies going alone in a car from Bangalore to this place, must have some mail. So they asked the gardener, "Hey gardener, we are going to Puttaparthi. Are you coming?" He was so happy. Because he had peeped through the window when Swami had gone to their house, and he had touched the ground upon which he had placed his feet, and he was so devoted that he said, "All right, I'll come in 1 hour." So he went to some dhoti's place, got freshly washed clothes of somebody, that's what they do. That's what they do in a hurry. So he dressed nicely. He came. "Then where are you going?" "Puttaparthi. I'm coming." So the son came. And the poor fellow with the borrowed clothes was left at Bangalore. Swami was just passing this way to some place. And the car came and they got down. And then they asked Swami why they have come. And Swami asked them. And then they said, "Yes." "Oh, that's all right." So the problem was solved as soon as they got down from the car and they simply went back. Swami went round to the women's side and asked Dr. Jayalakshmi, "Where are those people who came from Bangalore? Where are they? Well, they have left. Where are they? The Dr. Sundar Rao's people?" And Dr. Jayalakshmi, she is a good volunteer, she ran about all around the place and found that they were not there. They had come and gone. So she sent a telegram, "Baba wants you, asked for you." They had to start again for Puttaparthi. And the son said, "No, I can't come. I can't give up college for 2 days. The other day I came, today I am not coming." So they said, "Gardener, come today." Meanwhile, he had returned those clothes and he had to get another set. And he came. And then Baba said, "You disappointed." He came round to the women and said, "I wanted you back. Because you disappointed the gardener that day. I won't call you today. I'll call you only the gardener." Why did you disappoint him? Poor fellow, he was so anxious to come that day, and you brought your son instead. That is Baba. So, that is pricking the swollen head. So Baba reduces the burden of birth by cutting people to size and pricking swollen heads and making everyone as heavy as they ought to be. Nothing more. Then there is another statement that Swami makes. I have come in order to fulfill the promise that I made during the Rama Avatar. During the Rama Avatar, he had made a promise. And I have come to fulfill that. Now that was a problem for us. The whole Ramayana doesn't mention any promise that Rama had made. And Swami says, I have come for this, for this, for this, for this, and for fulfilling the promise I made during the Ramayana. So a number of us put our heads together, but no spark of illumination came. So we went on a deputation to Swami himself and said, Swami, what is the promise you made in the Treta Yuga? Treta Yosagina Korkelu Tirchukuru. In the Treta Yuga, I have made some promise, and in order to fulfill that, I have come. What is the promise you made during the Ramavatar, Swami? Say, during Ramavatar, who was in the battle, many Rakshasas were killed. Almost all the Rakshasas were killed. The promise was, I make the world free from Rakshasas. Rakshasa I'll make the world. So yes, the whole lot of them. And it seems one or two who remained, they prayed to Rama, what is to happen to all these people? You have saved monkeys and bears, animals. But are these demons, Rakshasas, so bad that they are to be damned for eternity? Is there no hope for them? And then Swami said, it seems, come during Kali Yuga. Keep it confidential. That is the secret to the whole affair. And Swami also said, it seems, these Rakshasas have been so wicked. Usually, in our scriptures, the rishis were saved by simple sight. Rama passed through the forest, they all saw him and they were saved. And the Krishna avatar, the gopis, the cowherds, boys and girls, men and women, were saved by the touch. And he told these Rakshasas, you can't be saved by mere sight. You can't be saved by mere touch. You must have a triple cure. Darshan, Sparshan, Sambhashan. You must hear my words. So you must take something in, you must apply something for the skin, and you must also follow a certain regimen, diet. And I come during Kali Yuga, I am also coming to Puttaparthi. and I'll give you all three. You can see me, you can touch me, you can hear my voice. And all three together will save you. That is the promise I gave, and that's why I have come, and that is why he has also come. Doesn't matter. You were Rakshasas in some previous life. You must thank Kausal Spirit because they are able to come. Because he has drawn us near. Let us not be sorry that we were Rakshasas sometime. That is past. And Swami says, past is past. Don't worry over it. Don't look back at the road by which you have come. We have come through the Rakshasa road. Doesn't matter. But where are we now? Let us be happy over that. Jai Sai Baba.